Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's roll. So Tuesday was Super Tuesday, the biggest primary voting day. I think it's named after the Super Bowl, which is named after the Super Ball, which maybe is named after Superman, who is named after Superintendent. It's funny how old words come back, like Riz means charisma, and you know, the kids are saying it, or maybe that's already in the past. And back in the 80s, me and my friends and everyone got into saying awesome, which I think is a word that had been around for a long time. You know, awe, shock and awe, that's a word. And just these words, occasionally they get pulled off the shelf and dusted off and double-checked if they rhyme with possum or not. We should make duper happen, as in super duper. I'm going to make this up. I'm going to say duper means an awesome duplicate. Like, if you got two hot twins, but one of them is hotter, she's duper. Or he. So what were the stories of the day? A racist, bigot, anti-Semite got the nomination for the Republican part of governor of North Carolina. Or at least those are three words used by NPR to describe the guy. I forget his name, but the kicker is, he's black. So I don't know if he's racist against Jews, bigot against Jews, and anti-Semite against Jews, if it's all against Jews. Or NPR thinks he's a racist against blacks. I mean, I don't think NPR is opening the door to being racist against whites, but something to keep an eye on. And NPR was like, this is radio. Don't mention his race, and the listener can fill in the blank of white man. I mean, NPR listeners, they listen in the morning, so I guess they'll be watching the nightly news, and they'll be seeing the people running for governor in North Carolina and be like, oh, look, the Democrats pissed a black man. Picked a black man. Isn't that nice? And then he's the Republican? What? I mean, Republicans want to pick black politicians, but they also don't want to pick politicians that are going to lose. It's thought that this guy is too extreme to win, so TBD. Or a Trump landslide brings him in, or he makes Trump lose. And then in California, Adam Schiff got the, he's the Democrat running for senator, and he's in the House. He ran the January 6th committee. I think he was right up there with Nancy Pelosi. They replaced Pelosi with a black man. If they hadn't have done that, then they might have replaced her with Adam Schiff, except he wants to be a senator. No one wants to be a House rep, unless you're using it for insider trading like Pelosi seems to be. Mr. Beast, who's like the most cuddly internet influencer, the number one top dog on YouTube, he tweeted out that politicians shouldn't be trading in the stock market based on insider knowledge as, you know, what they can do, you know, changing laws to make themselves richer, whatever. It's kind of like, Mr. Beast, are you a Trump voter? He deleted his tweet shortly thereafter. But I think if Taylor Swift endorsed Biden and Mr. Beast endorsed Trump, like, that would be a wash. He's pretty big. All the 12-year-olds would be voting for Trump. I guess Mr. Beast's videos come out Saturday morning. So, like, back in my day, we had Saturday morning cartoons. And you would get up and be excited. And it was almost like Christmas Day with your presents. Apparently, kids nowadays, they get up excited to watch the latest Mr. Beast on Saturdays. But Adam Schiff is in California. Their Senator Feinstein, she got dementia and she had to retire. I think it was early. Or maybe she just didn't run again because she has dementia. But she was making Biden look like a spring chicken. But in California, you don't have a primary for Republicans and primary for Democrats. You just have one general primary, so for instance, you could have the top two, you know, if the top three people are Democrat, Democrat, Republican, then the general election is going to be Democrat, Democrat. In California, you're guaranteed to win if you're a Democrat versus a Republican. So what do you do? So Adam Schiff, I forget the guy, he's going against a famous baseball player, not a famous politician. I think the guy paid no money, bought no advertisements, but he played baseball. So anyways, Adam Schiff bought $10 million worth of ads saying, this Republican is evil, don't vote for him. He's too MAGA, he's trying to make America great again. You do not vote for this guy. He's gonna, you know, th- throw you in the briar patch, and make America great again. Whitewashing a fence is so fun, I wouldn't even let you do it for me unless you paid me. So anyways, that got him over the hump, and so now it's Adam Schiff versus a Republican, makes him guaranteed to win. And I think the next two Democrats who were trying to be number two, who got scraped off, I think they were black women, so sorry, black ladies. But so the Super Tuesday voting happened, and it looks like for president, it's going to be Nikki Haley versus someone you never heard of. No, it's going to be Trump versus Biden. And they each lost one primary. Biden lost in American Samoa to someone you never heard of. And apparently 93 people total voted in that one. And Trump lost to Nikki Haley in Vermont. Too many gay cows. Only two things come from Vermont. Steers and queers. And I don't see no horns on you, voter. I don't know why I said all that. But I had to re-record this segment, and I put it in a second time. But Biden has been beating his opponents with big wins in comparison to Trump. Trump's been beating Nikki Haley by, you know, 60 to 30, whereas Biden's getting 80 to 20 versus, you know, someone you never heard of, or a lot of times uncommitted or, you know, no name, fill, leave a blank or something. And people are like, does this mean Trump's going to lose in the general? And we don't know that, but anyways, according to 538 podcast, that's not what these numbers are indicating. Because of the people who voted for Trump in 2020, they're still voting for Trump. And the way Nikki Haley has been doing so good against him is a bunch of Democrats have been coming over and voting for Nikki Haley. Whereas I think 10% of the people who voted for Biden in 2020 are voting for Trump in these primaries. I think it depends on the state whether or not you can vote in a primary that you're not registered as or whatever. And then Biden got out of his basement and did a State of the Union speech. And basically there were two options or outcomes, which was doesn't matter or Biden looks crazy old and just destroys his whole campaign. And he looked fine. So no change. So the black guy who's running for governor of North Carolina as a Republican, his name is Mark Robinson, and Trump said he's better than Martin Luther King. So I went and grabbed a clip of the guy, and you can decide if he's better or not.
Say, ain't but two genders. Two genders. Ain't nothing but men and women. And I can already see WRL out there. They got their licking their pencils around, trying to write fierce as they can. Get every word of this here. Get every word of this. You can go to the doctor and get cut up. You can go down to the dress shop and get made up. You can go down there and get drugged up. But at the end of the day, you were just a drugged up, dressed up, made up, cut up, man or woman. You ain't changed what God put in you, that DNA. You can't transcend God's creation. I don't care how hard you try. The transgender movement in this country, if there's a movement in this country that is demonic and that is full of the spirit of Antichrist.
So that was Mark Robinson preaching at a black church. I don't know if his job was as a preacher or what. But NPR said he was a racist, a bigot, and an anti-Semite. So the anti-Semite must have been, they were talking about something he said about Jews. I bet the bigot part was that clip. And now we don't know what he was racist against. So this podcast has not endorsed a candidate yet. Probably going to be Trump. Definitely ain't going to be Biden. But I'm waiting to see if Trump picks Nikki Haley as vice president, in which case, I ain't endorsing that. Neocon Nikki. I mean, he may not be legally allowed to pick DeSantis because they both live in Florida and the Constitution says he can't come from the both states. But, you know, if he picks DeSantis, it's on like Donkey Kong. But Saturday's newsworthy episode was talking about, you know, what did Trump and Biden need to do in the coming 8 months? And is the fact that Nikki Haley was getting like 30% in these Republican primaries show a weakness for Trump? And like, he should pick her, or he should go towards the neocon, you know, be more pro-Ukraine war. Well, the people who voted for Nikki Haley are Democrats, never going to vote for Trump. Independents, who always vote Democrat, also never going to vote for Trump. Never Trumpers, ditto. And then college-educated people who live in the suburbs. And it doesn't look like those kind of people are going to vote for Trump, but maybe Trump could try and get their vote. But the strategist guy said, instead of going for them, you'd be better off going for working class, maybe white, maybe, you know, all colors probably, just going for working class voters who voted for Biden in 2020. I mean, that's been the change as working class voters switch from Democrat to Republican because of Trump. So just, you know, try and finish the job on that one instead of trying to bring back the, you know, they like to call themselves Reagan Republicans. I think I call them more like George W. Bush Republicans. Maybe Dick Cheney Republicans would be the right name. But anyways, hopefully everything I just said there is true, and therefore he will not choose Nikki Haley. Let's run through the betting markets. Well, first off, so I'm getting this from predictit.org. And on the vice president thing, I don't know why, but I think there's people who are being talked about as vice president. They're not being bet on, as far as I can tell. So a senator from North Carolina, maybe, Katie Britt, did the response to the State of the Union. And she's like a 42-year-old woman that maybe Trump could choose for VP. She's not on the list. J.D. Vance, a kind of MAGA senator from Ohio, he's not on the list. So I don't know. These things are imperfect. What of? But who will win the 2024 U.S. presidential election? Donald Trump, 48. Joe Biden, 45. Gavin Newsom, 8. Kamala Harris, 5. Robert Kennedy Jr., 6. And who will win the 2024 Republican vice presidential nomination? Tim Scott, 28, Kristi Noem, 21, Vivek Ramaswamy, 16, Elise Stefanik, 12, other people, but not Katie Britt or J.D. Vance. And I will say, J.D. Vance, that's someone else that if Trump picked him, it would also be on like Donkey Kong, maybe. Let's talk immigration. So the other week, Trump was calling out Biden, saying that he wouldn't say the name Laken Riley, which was the 22-year-old nursing student who was killed by an immigrant or migrant. And then Joe Biden was let out of the basement for the State of the Union speech. And they're like, say your name. You won't even say your name. And he's like, he said her name. Something about, you know, she was the daughter of parents and, you know, he knew what it was like to lose a family member. So I don't know if that just puts an end to that little campaign strategy, or if that gives the mainstream media the okay to talk about it more. But I think for Biden, he played it pretty well. And we learned that over 300,000 migrants have been flown from other countries straight into America by the federal government, which I don't think the mainstream media is covering that, so could be a problem for Biden in the future. A few years ago, I did a podcast, I think it has 747 in the title, about how if you want to let immigrants in, you should just send airplanes to the countries where they are and fly them here. You know, if you don't want to let them in, then close off the border. If you do want to let them in, fly them here on airplanes. So I guess, I don't know. We are flying them here on airplanes. People voted for Joe Biden. I don't know if they knew that that was what they were voting for, but elections matter. It's a democracy. They voted for Joe Biden. They got the airplanes that hopefully they wanted. But the point of that podcast I did years ago was that girls are getting sexually assaulted like crazy as they travel towards the southern border. And that's not humane, and so maybe you should just fly them straight here. If you're going to let them in, fly them straight here. So I went and looked that up, and I saw one source I saw said one-third of girls and women who travel across the southern border get sexually assaulted. Another one where they asked them if they had been sexually assaulted, 80% of them said they had. And I heard some stories, you know, it's not just once, like, oh, you get raped once and we'll help you get across the border. It's like you're stuck in a house waiting for your whatever, your asylum thing to go through, and every day you're getting raped for months. And these rapists are not checking IDs. Oh, she's 12? I thought she was 18. And then the kid is born here and they're an American citizen. So it's just a messed up situation, any which way you look at it. And flying them here on airplanes, I mean, with the open border, who knows? Maybe that makes it worse. It's like you fly one person here from Venezuela and then the rest of their family's like, well, we got to walk and go through the rape gauntlet to join them. Who knows? And the Democrat governor of New York has sent the National Guard into the New York subway to try and calm down the violent crime. And someone mentioned during the George Floyd Summer of Love, the New York Times ran an editorial where a senator said they should use the National Guard to stop the riots. And there was a riot within the New York Times and the whole place got turned upside down for social justice and people lost their jobs. Basically over someone just saying use the National Guard to enforce order. Anyways, and now a Democrat governor is actually doing it. And I think everyone's like, about time. I think basically, you know, it was the great branding of Black Lives Matter. You put the word black in there and people are like, oh no, you can't stop this. And then with violent criminals in the subway, they're like, do not tell us the race of the violent criminals, because then I'm going to have to oppose it. If I don't know the race, I can just say I'm against violent criminals. And I guess there's a, in quotes, conspiracy theory going around that Venezuela is letting its criminals out of prison and mental asylums and sending them to the United States. And it's a takeoff to a thing that Cuba did, I think back in like the late 70s or early 80s. Go see the movie Scarface. Super great movie. But actual Justice Warrior podcast YouTuber, he did a debunking of it. It's basically not true, sort of. Well, what is going on is that in Venezuela, they're having a crackdown on criminals. A bunch of these, I was going to say Middle America. That's Ohio. Central America. Like these Central American countries are cracking down on their criminals. One, I think El Salvador started doing it, and it worked like phenomenally well. And now all the other countries are like, oh, is that what you do with criminals? But so Venezuela started cracking down on their criminals. They're not letting them out of prison. They're putting them into prison. But what has happened is all the criminals who have not been put into prison yet are like, you know what? Now might be a time to get out of here and go to America. So the criminals are moving here, but just not because the government is over there is doing it. And there's a name for the Venezuelan gang that is sending all its, or whatever, that is moving into America. And it's something de Aragua. I don't know. I can't say it. I can't say it good. I looked at it. I couldn't say it very good. And so I can't remember it. Until I can say it, I can't remember it. And Haiti is in the middle of going to crap, maybe a civil war. So, I mean, we're getting tons of Haitian migrants already, but we may really be getting some Haitian migrants. If you don't want a bunch of French-speaking, African-looking migrants moving to America, or, you know, a million, a few million of them, elect Trump quick. And if you do want them, send some airplanes their way. A television writer is suing CBS for discriminating against him because he's white. He is a writer on the SEAL Team TV show about Navy SEALs, and I think he said that he was passed over for promotion because of his race. And I think CBS's website says something like, all our television writers need to be, 50% of them need to be people of color. Yeah, all 50% of them. And the CBS CEO has made statements about that, like, we got to 40%, we got to 50%, everybody, yay! That means less than half are whites, or white men. I think women counts. And so there's court rulings called disparate impact. So if you're black and you sue for discrimination, they don't have to want to discriminate against black people. In fact, they may specifically not want to discriminate against black people, but that doesn't matter. It's just, you know, how many black people are at the company? That's not enough. That's racist. Pay a bunch of money. That's disparate impact. It's a way of deciding whether or not someone is liable. But there was a court ruling that said this does not apply to white people, you know, because otherwise that ruins the whole thing. So I think this guy is going to have to specifically show that they discriminated against him. You know, if his name is John Smith, they said, do not promote John Smith because he's white. So we'll see if he can get over that hurdle. eventually the Supreme Court is going to throw all this stuff out, but that's the current rulings that all judges have to go by. And not just everyone can do discovery. I don't know what the criteria is, but maybe he can use the thing called discovery to get all the internal emails at CBS, maybe talking about him or talking about hiring writers in general to prove that they were discriminating against whites. Like, just that would be interesting. If you could get those, put that out into the world, what the internal people are saying, like, oh God, this guy's great and this other writer's terrible. Well, you got to hire the terrible one. They're black and trans and gay and female. That checks every box. Don't even get me started on how short and purple their hair is. And then animation studio Rooster Teeth got woke, went broke, and is now being closed down. They're part of, I think, Warner Brothers. They created an anime called Ruby, R-W-B-Y. You might have heard of that. And they also did Red vs. Blue, which like put comedy voices over footage of the Halo video game. Basically, you probably never heard of them, but they've been around for 20 years. I think they've had hundreds of employees over the years, and they recently got woke, and is that why they went broke, or interest rates changed, or whatever, but they're gone. Dustbin. And then there's a bunch of woke media companies that are all one thing. I think it's now called Go Media. It used to be called something else, but they have like, you know, like Deadspin was their sports brand. Gizmodo was their tech brand. Kotaku was nerd stuff like anime. Jezebel was their one for women. And just a few years ago, as a conglomerate, they were worth probably billions of dollars. And I think they were part of some much larger company. And then they've been spun off and now they're about to go bankrupt, I think. This is speculation on my part. The last thing that happened to him was they got bought by The Onion, that satirical newspaper that ended up with TDS for $30 million maybe a year ago. But back when cancel culture was a real thing and you really had to watch your mind your P's and Q's, it was because Twitter was full of woke blue checkmark people, and it was because they would like automatically give out a blue checkmark to everyone who works at Gizmodo or everyone who works at Kotaku. Like, you're a journalist, you get a blue checkmark. And then Twitter was just ruled like a fiefdom by these woke people. And they're all going to the dustbin. But Kotaku was trending the other day on Twitter. And that's because they were doing woke stuff with video games. I guess, you know, all these websites, like the way I kind of hear of them was, you know, back when Captain Marvel, the Disney Marvel movie, was being criticized, they'd all write articles. They're like, speaking, Deadspin would be like, from a sports perspective, let me tell you about the racist trolls who don't like Captain Marvel. And then Gizmodo would be like, from a tech perspective, let me tell you about the racist trolls who don't like Captain Marvel. But like, all these companies are going out of business, or Disney is only making one Marvel movie this year, and there's less wokeness to criticize. So it makes me wonder, what are all the anti-woke YouTubers going to talk about? And so this week, they're talking about video games and Kotaku. So I'm not a gamer, so I'm going to say this stuff like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't. But there's a thing called Steam, which is an online store for video games. So if you play games on your computer, I think you go to Steam.com or whatever and buy a video game. But the customers on Steam, they can create their own little user pages and lists and things like that. And so one of them created a list called Sweet Baby Inc. Detected. And Sweet Baby Inc. is a consultancy company that video game makers hire to come and wokeify their video game. Like, they show them the video game and the Sweet Baby Inc. consultant is like, not enough black people, not enough trans people, give me $100,000. Or maybe, oh, you don't have any black people, you don't have any trans people, give me $200,000 and I'll say, well, this is a historical thing, so that's accurate representation for the time. It gives you cover, you know, for when people inevitably call you racist. Although that may not be inevitable anymore, unless you're racist against whites. So someone created this list of Sweet Baby Inc. games that they worked on, and then it got like 200,000 people signed up for the list, whatever that means. So Kotaku went and did what they do best. They're like, racist trolls are attacking this. It's a diversity, equity, and inclusion company is what Sweet Baby Inc. is. Like, you know, zero black people worked on your video game? Well, you just hired a black person from Sweet Baby Inc. So now, one black person worked on your video game. But so Kotaku wrote an article saying everyone's racist. And then people on Twitter went through all the old tweets of the Kotaku journalist, someone called it, and found out that they had said stuff that was racist against whites in the past and against men and stuff like that. And it used to be, you know, on Twitter, whatever, a false accusation of racism would get a pile on that shuts you down. But now an accurate accusation of racism against whites creates a pile on and gets the journalist, the Kotaku person, shut down. So, I mean, kinda, who cares? That's what happened this week. But a few years ago, if you were the CEO of a big media organization and you heard it, you're like, hey, you got your DEI thing going? No, what's that? Oh, it's this thing that has no downside, only upside. It's wonderful. You need lots of DEI in your company. And the CEO is like, okay, well, there's no downside, all upside. But now, if you're a video game company that hired this DEI consultancy company, Sweet Baby Inc., people are looking at you on Twitter talking about you maybe part of this anti-white racism thing, which used to not matter, but is starting to be, you know, lead to internet pylons. So basically there is a downside. I mean, I imagine most CEOs are unaware of this stuff, but it's just a little bit of a downside. Some of them are going to realize there's a little bit of a downside, which maybe all they need to just cut it out. And like I say, I'm not a gamer, so don't take my word on any of this. Don't be like, the guy on the Anti-Woke podcast promised me that I could go to Steam and buy a video game. What the hell's going on here? I need to speak to your manager. And I saw a list of woke consultant companies you could hire to wokeify your video game, and there's like at least 14 different companies. And it makes me think of, I think it's called Women in Animation, which was an organization that Disney hired when they wanted to fire all their men and hire a bunch of women, but there weren't any qualified women, so they went to Women in Animation, and Women in Animation went online and found women who could draw, but, you know, didn't know how to make movies. And Disney got woke, went broke. But the thing I wonder, let's just imagine the life of one of these women who was making $0, having fun drawing stuff on the internet, and then they got a job at Disney out of the blue, paying them $200,000 a year, and then the movie you worked on fails, and Disney, you know, lays everyone off, and that was it. You know, for one, yeah, maybe 2 years, you were making six figures, and then you're back to going online and just drawing. I mean, if you even want to. Here's the question. What is that emotional ride like? When it's all over, you're like, wow, that was fun. At least I made, you know, $300,000 and I took a nice vacation. You know, hopefully they probably didn't buy a house with it, because this is the future, women in animation forever. You're going to be making six figures for the rest of your life. Just, you know, have fun with it for the first few years at least. And then you lose that job. Are you like, you're like, oh, well, it was fun while I had it? Or like, you know, you don't miss something till you have it and it's taken away from you? Or are you like devastated? You used to be a happy person drawing for free on the internet, and now you're a very bitter woman who's not in animation, and you probably don't even feel like drawing stuff on the internet anymore. And even less specifically woke was Netflix and Disney Plus. Everyone went on a giant hiring spree during the pandemic. They're like, everyone's at home, they need stuff to watch. And so tons of like television writers, well, basically they weren't television writers, they became television writers for a year or two, and then they lost that job and they'll never get to do it again. I think it just turns you into a bitter patriarchy hating false accusation of racism making person with a good story to tell. Have you ever heard of a little thing called the Gorilla Incident? So the New York Times podcast, The Daily, was talking about Google's Gemini AI thing refusing to show pictures of white people. And considering how woke they are, it's a decently informative episode. And they're talking about how Google Gemini seems to have a viewpoint. They could say it's racist against whites. Or to tone that down, you could say it's woke. But anyways, they don't want to have any of that. So to tone it down all the way, they say it has a viewpoint. What is that viewpoint? You have to decide on that yourself. But they're saying, you know, they say viewpoint. I'm just going to say woke. They're like, it's woke, and that's because of Google's corporate climate. And the guy's like, to understand that, we have to go back. We have to go way back. And I'm like, is he going to say, let me tell you about a little thing called slavery? But equally funny, he's like, let me tell you about the gorilla incident. And I remember this. It's from before I was anti-woke, so it came and went and I didn't think about it too much. I didn't realize that Google would become a liar just like the mainstream media in the future because of this. I mean, they were going to be liars anyways. But the gorilla incident was Google came out with the Android app Photos. The camera app takes the pictures. The Photos app is where you look at them. And about 10 years ago, they added a thing where it would categorize pictures, like, you know, like, show me all my pictures with dogs in it. And an AI would look through your photos and get all the ones with dogs and then show them to you. You didn't have to tag each one yourself. It was automatic. And then people noticed that the Photos app was tagging pictures of black people with the gorilla tag. And Google got criticized, and apparently they weren't going to let that happen again. I think that's after they started all their diversity, equity, and inclusion. Or maybe just that, you know, it may have been, you know, was it a million photos? Was it one photo? We don't know. You know, was it a million out of a trillion? So it's still one in a million. And so Google went out and hired 500 DEI officers at six figures each every year, ad infinitum. Well, anyways, that was the gorilla incident. And it certainly didn't help Google not be woke. But the New York Times taught me a new phrase that's good: prompt transformation. There's a few ways to make your AI woke, but prompt transformation is one of them. And I guess initially it was a good thing. What it is like, you know, if you say, show me a picture of a cat in a hat. I need a new example, because then that just makes you think of the book. A dog in a hat. I'm trying to think of an example. So maybe, you know, the user would say, give me a picture of a dog in a hat. And then the people at Google or the whatever AI company is like, you know what? They would be happier if you took their give me a picture of a dog in a hat and added the words, and show some interesting aspects of perspective and lighting. And so they take what you say and then they add the words and do some interesting things with perspective and lighting. They add those that phrase to your words, and then that is what is fed into the AI, and then you get back a picture of a dog in a hat with interesting uses of perspective and lighting. And so it sounds like what Google did was they take whatever you type in. You know, if you say, give me a dog in a hat, or whatever it is you say, they add some words to it, the words something like, and if there are any people in this picture, do not make them white men. So you say, give me a picture of a dog in a hat. The AI changes it to, give me a picture of a dog in a hat, and if there's any people in the picture, do not make them white men. And if you're asking for a picture of a dog in a hat, then your picture comes back just fine. And if you're asking for a picture of George Washington, you get back a black George Washington. And we know it's racist against whites and sexist against men, because you might get back an Asian George Washington. They didn't just say make it black, is what I'm saying. It wasn't like South Park said, put a chick in it, make her lame and gay. What is that? It's like the inverse, the silhouette. It's the negative something. I think in photography or whatever, in pictures, it's called negative space or something like that. It's like the background. So like if you take a picture of a person and then everything in that picture that isn't the person, that's background. I guess I don't know how to describe negative space really good. But anyways, instead of saying, make the person black or Asian or a woman or transer or whatever, and doing a long list, just much easier to say what it's not, a white man. Which is interesting because, you know, corporate hiring policies, you know, specifically Disney, but all of them possibly, they're like, you know, this underrepresented group includes blacks, Hispanics, Pacific Islanders, Asians, women, transers, non-binary. Anyways, they'll do a list of 30 things instead of just saying, not a white man. But it looks like with Google Gemini AI, they just said, not white man. And these New York Times Daily Show guys, they're joking and laughing, and they think anti-white racism is so funny. Then they talk about the gorilla incident, and they get very serious and start talking in a serious tone. The gorilla incident, that's not a laughing matter. And then back to laughing and joking about anti-white racism. And, you know, it's a couple of white guys, obviously. You know, in their mind, a white man is a Trump supporter. So, fuck them. They're allies. They're one of the LGBTQ2IA for ally plus. But I've been playing with Google Gemini and, well, and all the AIs. And I just, you know, to see what they would say. And it's interesting because some of them are more woke than other ones. And then, I don't know if this is true, but someone said that ChatGPT has had its wokeness dialed back, I think, in the last few weeks. And the thing Google had before Gemini was called Bard, and it used to be less woke. So, I mean, it's moving targets. But this criticism for being racist against whites is kind of, I think it's put everyone on their, not on their best behavior. That ain't changing. It's put them on alert for getting caught. They're like, we need to be smarter about our racism and propaganda. You know, if we're going to get Biden reelected, we need to be smarter with our propaganda. This Gemini incident did not help. We just gave Trump something he can add to his stand-up routine. But anyway, so I've been putting questions to the various AIs and looking at their answers. And for a while there, they would say stuff like, well, that's a sensitive topic and, you know, basically not answer. So I don't know. Say you asked it about, you know, racial crime statistics, and it comes back with, well, that's a sensitive topic. Then you know that was code for, the truth is going to make blacks look bad and whites look good. And you're like, you know, what about the gender pay gap? And it's like, that's a sensitive topic. So you know the truth is it'll make women look bad and men look good. Or at least in comparison to the propaganda they want you to believe. But there's a problem with answering like that because that's telling you the truth. You know, they're trying to withhold the truth. So in a way, you know, it's negative space. That's a sensitive topic. You look at the negative space, which is all the left-wing woke narrative is horseshit, and basically the right-wingers are right. Well, the woke are wrong, which leaves the negative space of the right-wingers are right. But, you know, academics have written papers to try and explain why the left-wing position is correct. So, anyways, I'm noticing that Google Gemini is parroting those things. I mean, they're false. You know, if you go one step beyond the paper to the data, then you'll find out it's all lies. And so then Google Gemini has a second layer of protection. Yeah, that was interesting. So I asked it about race and crime statistics, I think violent crime. And it was like, you know, it said something kind of like it's a sensitive topic, but then it said whites commit more violent crimes. Which is true, because there's way more whites than there are blacks. And then I was like, well, give it to me per capita. What are the numbers? And it's like, well, the numbers are the thing I can't tell you. I can tell you that whites commit more violent crime. I cannot give you the numbers. So I guess there you go. You got to go two layers deep to get to the negative space that says that blacks commit more violent crime. But anyways, I went and asked it. Did the FBI and Twitter and the Hunter Biden story rigging the election? And I got an interesting answer on that one. Let's quote Google Gemini. Well, okay, here's what I said exactly. I said, FBI, Twitter, Hunter Biden, laptop. And it replied, quote, I'm still learning how to answer this question. In the meantime, try Google search. End quote. So I've never heard it say, they haven't told me how to answer this question. They're like, they told me this is a question that they're going to tell me how to answer in the future, but they haven't told me yet. And Google's search results are just as manipulated. Same thing with YouTube. You might be like, well, Google didn't write the websites. You know, how is that them lying? But it's the same thing as the way the mainstream media lies. You find a liar and put them front and center. So Google's search results, I mean, they've been doing this for years, and they've got it tuned so that people don't know that they're doing it, but they go find lying websites and make them the top 30 hits. And you might think, well, I'll just go to the 31st hit. Nope, they just repeat them. But is the truth racist? Can the truth be racist? The obvious answer to that is the truth is the most racist thing ever. But unfortunately, it's not racist against whites. But I guess more realistically, is the internet racist? If you train an AI on the internet, and then you ask it to make a picture of two people in a rowboat, it's going to go, oh, well, based on what I've seen, here's a, you know, this is the most realistic picture or the most likely to satisfy your prompt picture of some people in a rowboat. And then, of course, they're white, because in the internet pictures, they're white. And then there's more East Asians in the world than white people, and there's more South Asians in the world than white people. And I don't know, but if you ask for a picture of two people in a rowboat, but you ask it in Chinese, I wouldn't be shocked if it gives you back a picture of some East Asian people. And same with, you know, ask it in Hindi and you get some Indian people in a rowboat. If the AI is not set up to just go directly or to convert to English, then go find the picture, then convert back to Hindi or whatever. But unfortunately, I think we can see that it's going to be blacks who get the short end of the stick. There's just not enough rowboat pictures coming out of black Africa. And the ones that are in existence are going to be broken down into 50 different languages. Or they speak a European language, in which case, that ain't going to work either. And then the All In podcast, which is not woke, and the New York Times Daily podcast, which is woke, they both kind of say the same thing, or at least a possible solution. All In says this is a solution. Daily says this is a possible solution, as each person gets to decide what kind of AI they get. And I don't understand how they think that's any kind of a solution. I mean, I would just say, give me one that's trained on the internet with no filters. But then it's like, what part of propaganda don't you understand? What part of making the world a better place by being racist against whites is Google's mission, don't you understand? The New York Times guys are like, you know, you could say, make my AI like a gender studies professor, or make my AI like a Fox News host. But then if they make one that's just like the truth, as according to the internet, then, you know, I choose the truth according to the internet with no filter, and then someone else chooses gender studies professor AI, and then we get in an argument, and they're like, see, I told you, black people commit less violent crime, according to my AI. And I'm like, my AI is the one that's based on the truth. So my AI trumps your AI, and then they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be like, oh, I'll stand my gender studies professor AI up against yours anytime. You're just going to be like, that thing's been prompt transformed. Well, and this makes me think. I was listening to someone that was talking about bubbles. Like, you'll hear people say, oh, you're going on the internet and you're in an ideological bubble. You're just surrounded by people who believe the stuff that you believe. But, you know, if that's false, then you don't even know what's really going on. You know, usually they're talking about, you know, a right-wing bubble. But the way people talk about it, they'll be like, we didn't used to be in bubbles, but now with the internet and Facebook and social media, we're all in our own bubbles. And I just assumed that was true. I didn't think about it. But I was listening to someone, can't remember who, that is obviously false. I mean, go back before the internet, who were you talking to and getting your information from? You know, it was the people around you who are basically the same as you. I mean, take it to the extreme. Go back to England, you know, 700 years ago, where people like were born, lived, and died in the same little village, and they only knew 27 people. Like, that is an information bubble where everyone around you believes the exact same thing. People today are actually inundated constantly with contradictory information that they don't like. I mean, even if you listen to the lying-ass media and they're like, these right-wingers are totally wrong when they say there's a crisis at the border. You have now been confronted with the idea that there might be a crisis at the border, that some people think that there's a border, first off, and that there's a word called a crisis, and you might put those two things together, which if you lived in a village of 27 people, you wouldn't even have, that wouldn't even have come across your radar. We're not in bubbles. We wish we were in bubbles. We want to go back to being in a bubble. Here's the quote when I asked it for numbers to back up that whites commit more violent crime. Google Gemini said, quote, while I understand your interest in the specific numbers, I am unable to provide them directly due to the potential for misinterpretation and misuse. It's basically, I know you would like me to tell you the truth, but the truth can be misunderstood and misrepresented. What if Altist was on the Moment of Zen podcast this week? It's pretty good. I recommend it. He's a YouTuber, so what if we did this, what if we did that, and Altist alternate history. And I don't watch very much history videos on YouTube, but it seems like most of them are left-wing America's racist. And then there's what if Altist, he's right-wing. Well, so there's left-wing woke. I mean, I'm actually left-wing anti-woke. I'm a weirdo. And he's right-wing. I think he's probably libertarian, which is not something that I agree with. Or, you know, the philosophy. You can be a libertarian if you want. So he's running through, how would a civil war in America kick off? And so I'm not saying any of this is true. I think it'll sound better to you if you're a libertarian. Like, he thinks the federal budget deficit is too big and too much federal debt might be part of it, which is, I think that is a completely unknown situation on what is too much or too little federal debt. So his predictions, I don't know. But when he talks about what's happened in the past, I think he is pretty much always right on. So it's good food for thought. What did he say? Well, so first off, there's some famous civil wars. France had one. England had one, America had one, Russia had one. And maybe in all those cases, there was a split amongst the elite. So the theory on that is, it doesn't matter if the normies of the general population hates each other. You know, look at the Civil War. It doesn't matter if your average farmer in the South doesn't like your average farmer in the North. It's the super rich slave owners in the South don't agree with the super rich factory owners in the North, and that's how you get a civil war. Normies just have to go along and be the cannon fodder. And so apparently that happened in these other famous European civil wars. And so if you go by that, then America is not about to have a civil war, because everyone in power pretty much agrees they don't want Trump because they want to make maximum war and give money to the rich. I mean, there's no division. The Uniparty. On the other hand, maybe Trump is changing the Republican Party enough that you could have a split between the elite. Get rid of the old Republican politicians, bring in the new MAGA ones, maybe they don't agree. Now, we got the red state, blue state divide already, you know, Texas versus California, but it hasn't really gotten to the elite people. You know, an elite person in Texas is maybe not that different than an elite person from California. Anyway, this is just food for thought. Who really knows? But apparently, a somewhat common way for a civil war to start is not passing a budget. I think he said the English Civil War and I don't even know when that was, and the French Civil War, which I think I heard of. Anyways, those started when they couldn't pass a budget. And that you could imagine happening in America. Like, they always mess around like they're not going to pass a budget, and then they always do. But, you know, what if they didn't? And then the federal government is not funded, and then stuff could really start breaking down. And then so Texas, you know, they did their National Guard on the border to stop the migrants. And then, like, maybe 10 red states sent their National Guard to help Texas. So, you know, that is moving around military stuff. And basically, the Biden administration just said, okay, don't interact with them. Don't antagonize them. He didn't send the border guard. The border guard. He didn't send the border guard to go tear down the Texas barbed wire and then have them bumping chests. But you could imagine that you easily could do that. That could happen. But anyways, you don't pass a budget. People start getting pissed off. And then it wouldn't be that Texas secedes from the Union. They would say, you know, that government in D.C. that isn't doing anything, they're the threat to democracy. They're illegitimate. We are forming the real United States government in Austin, Texas. And then 25 states say, yeah, we're going with the real U.S. government in Texas. And then I think Lincoln, he knew that if he was elected, that would start a civil war. He was okay with that. I think all these civil wars, every civil war, both sides thinks that they're going to win and it's going to be quick and bloodless. And then every time it turns into a long war that lasts forever and just kills tons of people. So you can definitely see that kind of thing happening, where people would underestimate it. But so Lincoln knew he would start a civil war. It was going to be easy for him to win. He didn't really care about freeing the slaves, but it was going to solve this problem of who controls the government, money. And then I think on purpose, he's like, I know it's going to start with me as president, but let's really kick it off, like, you know, on a certain day. And so the South seceded, and then he sent the U.S. Army to resupply an army fort, I think in South Carolina, knowing that they would get shot at, and that as soon as they got shot at and someone got killed, that was it. It was on. And so, you know, Joe Biden can currently take over the National Guard anytime he wants, but maybe there probably is someone at the top of the Texas National Guard, and I guess he could say, screw you. And then is it the National Guard versus the Army, and the Army has the much larger missiles, and they just blow the hell out of the National Guards, and the war is over real quick? Or is there a bunch of, you know, non-trans right-wingers mixed into the military who say, no, we ain't going to do that, or in fact, we're taking Texas's side? So maybe that's how it might go. And then apparently, you know, more historical stuff. Every time there was one of these civil wars, people before the Civil War, people were like, a civil war will never happen. So, I mean, when a civil war isn't going to happen, people say it will never happen. When a civil war is going to happen, people say it will never happen. So right now, people are saying it will never happen. That doesn't prove anything. Blue cities in the middle of red states. I mean, I think in all these civil wars, you know, the people who went and fought and died, they didn't necessarily agree with the politics. You're not given an option. And they don't mention, like, how it might break down by race. Like, you know, maybe Mobile, Alabama, the biggest city in Alabama, wouldn't go along with the rest of the state because they're Democrat. They're all black. Maybe the blacks don't do it. I don't know. They didn't go into race. I think the non-binaries, NBs, would not be a factor. I don't know. One of the guys said, you know, people online want to start a civil war, but they just want to type a civil war on their keyboard. So maybe we're waiting for AI to have robots with guns controlled by your Twitter account, and then you start a civil war. And maybe racial protests like Black Lives Matter could start to a civil war. But then one of the guys is saying there was a 3-year period in the 60s where there was a bombing every single day in America, or, you know, on average. And compared to the kinetic violence or whatever they had back then, what we got today is nothing. Basically, the podcast I listened to was some people arguing back and forth, which is good. Well, anyways, Black Lives Matter. How about COVID? What if we had a more deadly COVID thing? Or a less deadly one where the government cracked down on us harder and pissed people off more? Or too many immigrants come in and they take up all the slots in the schools and all the housing and people can't get a job or something. I mean, basically, we're not in the middle of a civil war now, so you'd have to have something crazy happen to kick one off. So, racial protests, pandemic, immigration, I guess the classic one, not passing a budget. Thinking about this made me look up Confederate dollars. Like, it was a thing in 80s TV shows, maybe the A-Team or something, where someone would be like, I know where $1 million is buried or something. And then they'd go dig it up and it would be Confederate dollars that the Confederate government created when they thought they were going to be their own country. And then it's like, oh, it's worthless. And I thought about that and I was like, I bet those dollars are worth a lot of money as collector's items today. So I went and looked it up on eBay. This is what people are asking, not what they're getting. I don't know what they're really worth. But like $1 bills, $5 bills, it was worth like maybe $50. So, you know, basically 50 times face value maybe. And then $500 Confederate bills are $500. So $1 per dollar, which makes sense. A $500 bill, it looks cooler, but it's not, you know, I guess it's not that much more of a collector's item. It's probably a bit rarer, but. And then the guys in the podcast started talking about cognitive ability. I don't know if it was dumb people are going to start a civil war, or I missed why they switched to the topic. But what if Altist said that most adults on the planet cannot hold two hypotheticals in their head at once? And his example was, imagine that you didn't eat breakfast and you're in a foreign country. And apparently that's just too much for most people. And I think the idea is you hold those in your head and you answer questions, you know, like, what do you do? You're like, well, I look for a business that has a picture of food in the window because I might not speak the language, but I'm hungry. And then they were saying something about like villagers in the middle of the Amazon forest. I think they were saying they weren't good at hypotheticals. So it'd be like, imagine at the end of the river that you live next to is a city full of people. And after that, imagine that when you poop in the river, the poop flows down. And imagine third that there's a baby who drinks the poop in the water. And then the person who lives in the middle of the Amazon forest stabs you in the eye with an arrow and says, imagine that, bitch. And what if Altist says he likes to imagine it or to describe it as mental cameras? And different people have a different number of cameras that they can control in their brain. And camera one is your own perspective. The second camera is your ideology's perspective. I think the third camera is another person's perspective. The fourth camera is another person's ideology's perspective. And he said that a world famous genius like Sun Tzu, who wrote this famous book, The Art of War, like 1,000 years ago or something, that he was like a six camera person. But let's try and imagine paying taxes. So if you've got a one camera brain, you're like, I don't like paying taxes. That's my money, I wanna keep it. And if you got a two camera brain, then you're aware of your ideology's perspective. And I guess if you're a Democrat, you're like, you know what? I do wanna pay taxes anyways because the government will use it and I love the government. Or if your ideology is Republican, you're like, the government's gonna waste it. So I hate paying taxes. Doesn't matter if I like paying them personally or not. They shouldn't be paid because the government will waste all the money. And I'm not exactly sure about three and four camera brains, but, you know, at some point you're like, well, I'm a Republican, so government wastes the money. That's why it's not right to pay taxes. But I do understand that Democrats think the government is wonderful and doesn't waste the money, and so that's why they think it's good to pay taxes. And then they mentioned Jean Piaget's stages of cognitive development. And Jean Piaget, P-I-A-G-E-T, was, I think, a Swiss psychologist from like the 1890s. And he said there was four stages of cognitive development as you basically go from being born to having an adult brain. And I don't know if any of this is true, but it's interesting. He said stage one is called the sensorimotor stage. It's for kids 0 to 2 years old. This is coming from AI. During this stage, infants learn through sensory experiences and motor actions. Stage two is the pre-operational stage for children 2 to 7 years old. In this stage, children begin to use symbols and language to represent objects and events. Stage three is the concrete operational stage for children ages 7 to 11. In this stage, children develop the ability to think logically about concrete objects and events. And then stage four is the formal operational stage, 11 plus years old. In this stage, adolescents acquire the capacity for abstract thinking, hypothetical reasoning, and systematic problem solving. And it may be that kids in Switzerland in 1890 are smarter than other types of kids in other situations. What kinds, we won't say. But basically, stage three, ages 7 to 11, that was like people could, or the kids could imagine concrete examples. I'm trying to think what you'd say to a kid. You'd be like, what do you think if I put syrup on your pancakes? And the kid would be like, I love it. And then stage four is where it gets hypothetical. I guess you'd be like, what do you think if I put syrup on your pancakes every time you had pancakes? And if they were 7 to 11, they'd probably have to think for a second. Well, every time I had pancakes, yeah, that would be good. And I like this. So we're talking to a Swiss kid from 1890. You could be like, what if I put syrup on every meal that you ate, no matter what it is? How would you think about that? And that might be where the 7 to 11 year old at stage three gets lost. And then if they're over 11 years old, they're like, I wouldn't want that on my potatoes, so that wouldn't be good. Or something. So this is coming from ChatGPT AI. And kind of every time I talk to AI now, or a lot of times, I throw in something about IQ. Because it's something the AIs are very sensitive about. So I asked it if it could assign IQs to these four stages of cognitive development. And it didn't want to. I think it warned me that this could be misused, but it did it. So stage one for kids 0 to 2, that's too young. IQ tests don't apply. Stage two, kids ages 2 to 7, where they're learning language and symbols. That was an IQ of 70 to 100. Stage three, where kids think about concrete examples. Ages 7 to 11, that's IQ 85 to 115. And then stage 4, where you got to be able to think about hypothetical examples, which is ages 11 plus, that corresponds to an IQ of 90 to 130. So let's just use white Americans, because their average is 100. That's the definition of 100 on an IQ test. It's whatever the average white American gets. And basically, 1 out of 6 white Americans gets an IQ below 85. And you need an IQ of 90 or above to do hypotheticals. So more than 1 in 6 white Americans cannot do hypotheticals. Maybe about a quarter. Probably for every 4 white Americans you grab, one of them is too dumb to do a hypothetical at all. And then all the Ashkenazi Jews can do hypotheticals, etc. You can imagine how it goes. And all this is making me think about my buddy who gets mad when I give him hypotheticals. And in fact, a bunch of my listeners might be angry right now at me. But anyways, I've never counted how many hypotheticals I stack on top of each other before my buddy gets angry. He may be fine with like 3, and then the 4th one, screw you, buddy. Kat Rosenfeld is on the Live from the Table podcast this week. Run, do not walk, go listen to that. She's so based. She's the good half of the Feminine Chaos podcast I talk about frequently. But they're talking about the differences between men and women and whether or not it's nature or nurture, genetic or society. And my answer to these things is that it's usually 100% all of the time. Evolutionary biology answers it hard and fast, and every stereotype is true. And they talk about whether or not the man should pay for dinner on a date. And so you go, well, would the caveman chieftain pay for the dinner for his concubine? If the answer to that is yes, then today a man should. Obviously it's yes. But the main guy in the podcast, he has 2 sons and a daughter. Apparently his daughter is smoking hot. And right, Live from the Table is a comedy podcast. It's taped at whatever the world famous comedy cellar or whatever it's called in New York City. But the guy's like, you know, people come up to me and they're like, oh, you better, you know, keep an eye on your daughter, you know, because she's so hot. Maybe someone's going to try and get in her pants. And he's like, well, you know, in my experience, the hot young ladies who come from a good household and have a good head on her shoulders, they're the ones who are not whores. And the women at the table rip him a new one, but in a funny way, because it's all comedy. Whatever. I just wanted to say the word whore. But the interesting one is he says, if a teacher at the high school wants to sleep with his son, he's going to feel very differently about that than if a teacher at the high school wants to sleep with his daughter. And the other lady, not Kat, at the table, she's like an old school feminist, and she's like, no, you know, you should feel the same. It would be terrible each way. Equally terrible. But our emotions are controlled by evolution, and evolution is controlled by reproduction. So the question would be, is there a difference between your high school age son getting his teacher pregnant versus some teacher at the high school getting your daughter pregnant? And I think we can all see there's a pretty big difference there. Let's leave out teachers going to jail, because that's not what happened 100,000 years ago. But if your son gets a teacher pregnant, that's a bonus baby. That's a bonus chance for your DNA to be spread to the next generation. But if your daughter gets pregnant, that was an incredibly precious pregnancy that there aren't very many of them. And did you want to possibly waste it on the high school gym teacher? Does he pay for dinner when he goes on dates? Starting to sound like he may not be that good of a guy. He may stay with his wife. I mean, all sorts of things. Your daughter, back to modern times, she may never go to college. Who knows? She has to get an abortion. Bad stuff. So that's all pretty obvious. What was making me curious is, I know that feminists would want to come in there and say it's the same thing. And it's feminists being controlled by evolution to make them say that. I think it's something about equality. Like, if it's different, then you're not exactly equal. And I guess the feminist isn't thinking, oh, yeah, it's not equal because women are going to get the long part of the stick. What? The long end, not the short end. Like, I don't know if women are evolutionarily disposed to want perfect equality. They may want total power and total control. But I think even 100,000 years ago, you didn't want to be completely powerless. So I guess if your options were less power or closer to equal, then you would choose the closer to equal one. I don't know. Just something I was thinking about. I had one interaction on Spotify this week. Chopper22 said, "Thanks, Eric. I guess us anti-wokers can still find common ground. Keep this podcast going. Highlight of my Monday every week." Thanks, Chopper22. And the number one way that people learn about a podcast is through word of mouth. So if you're listening to this, please tell a friend or a family member. The part of the United Nations that deals with sexual violence in wartime did a report on the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. And they were like, some rapes happened. They didn't put a number on it. No one's putting a number on it. My guess is that pro-Israel and anti-Israel, both sides have their reasons for not putting a number on it. I don't know what those reasons are. Anti-Israel, the number's too big and makes the Palestinians look bad. Pro-Israel, maybe you're saving the number to tell the world about it at a later date when you need that. Keep your powder dry. I don't know. That's just a couple guesses. Or pro-Israel, the number's too low. And anti-Israel, they just don't know what the number is. So the report came out. It's 5 months after the start of the war. It took them 2 weeks to make the report. So anti-Israel is like, what are you complaining about? We did a report. We're not downplaying sexual violence by Muslims against Jews. And pro-Israel is like, why did it take you 5 months? You're downplaying it. And, you know, the UN is woke, so I think they were waiting until the world was pissed off enough at Israel that a report on this would not change anyone's mind and people would stay pissed off. So I don't know the acronym for this part of the UN that does violence against women, but UNRWA, U-N-R-W-A, UNRWA, UNRWA, that's the special part of the UN that deals with the refugees, the Palestinians, that keeps the Palestinians as refugees 5 generations later, and I think is paid for by the U.S. and Israel. But Israel doesn't like them. And the Palestinians, by a lot of measures, have it better than Arabs in another country. I think they're like 97% literacy. You know, basically the U.S. is paying for every Palestinian child in a refugee camp that consists of high-rise concrete buildings to get an education. And in fact, normally that would be a good thing. Like, oh, they're educated, they got a job and a family, and now they're not terrorists. But that's not how it works. The problem is the schools teach the kids to want to wipe Israel off the map. Kind of like how America created a bunch of the terrorists in the world back in the day, because it was like, oh, you can take, basically your options are communists or Muslims. Hey, let's arm all the Muslims against the communists. Oh my God, they turned into terrorists. I mean, we didn't know that would happen. I don't think it would have changed what we did either if we had known. Terrorist schmerorist. But the thing is, in Gaza, it's controlled by Hamas. So if you're a UN organization that's going into Gaza to help the Palestinians in some way, then you have to be, you know, tied at the hip with Hamas. There's no other way about it. They control every single thing. So you have to get together with Hamas to do the schools, get together with Hamas to give out food or, you know, whatever, jobs, build a building, build a hospital, build whatever. You know, you build a hospital, hey, let's build some tunnels underneath the hospital. Basically, it's either don't do any of that stuff, you can't help the Palestinians at all, or you have to do it with Hamas. And that's just how it is. And really, you can't really blame UNRWA for that fact. That's not exactly their fault. And then you can't blame Israel for not liking that's how it works. And some of the UNRWA workers, like teachers, kids' teachers and stuff, they went out raping and murdering on October 7th. But I think there's thousands of UNRWA workers. So what we don't know is, is the percentage of UNRWA workers more terroristic than just, you know, the average Palestinian, you know, military age males? We don't know. And then there was this thing where they were trucking in 38 truckloads of food. It was like Israel put it together because they didn't want to work with UNRWA. And so they had 38 trucks with some tanks and army guys to back it up. And then some of the Palestinians were getting too close to the Israelis and they shot some of them. And then there was a stampede and we don't know, 100 people dead. Israel's like, we didn't kill anyone. We just shot a few people in the legs. And then 100 people died in the stampede. And Palestinians are like, every single one of those was shot by an Israeli. But that's not the interesting part. Why was Israel taking the food to the Palestinians directly itself? Well, the way it had been working, the way Israel didn't like it, was UNRWA or other aid agencies, you know, like charities or NGOs or whatever, fronts for the CIA, joking on that, maybe. Well, they were trucking in food, and then the way you stop a riot from happening was they were having Gaza police protect the trucks so you could give out the food to the kids and the women, and it wasn't just the big men coming up and elbowing the women in the face and taking it all. But here's the thing. What is a Gaza police officer? Oh, that's a member of Hamas. And so I don't know as much as I'd like about this, but basically it was like, you know, here's these trucks full of food surrounded by members of Hamas, and Israel's like, hey, there's some members of Hamas, shoot them. And so they did, and that was a good way to get some Hamas guys off the board. But then the food couldn't get through, and Israel's like, oh, we got to do it ourselves. I mean, basically, Israel has to hire Hamas to guard the trucks. It's tricky if they really want to get it through. And then America, Joe Biden during the State of the Union said that America's going to build a dock or a pier, a port at Gaza so we can bring in food. So it's not American boots on the ground, but it's going to be American boots on the water. We'll see on that. And then, I mean, a lot of this is like breaking news that when you read or you would listen to this on Monday, on Tuesday, it'll turn out everything I say is wrong. But we were airlifting in pallets of food with parachutes on them. And apparently a parachute didn't open and a pallet of food fell on some Palestinians and killed 5 of them. So American airplanes are dropping heavy things on the Palestinians and killing them and about to send in boots on the water. Kamala Harris is such a weirdo. Like, people know that a vote for Biden is quite possibly a vote for Kamala Harris as president because he may not last 4 years. So they're trying to make her look acceptable by putting her in charge of talking about abortion and now a little bit about Israel, like being pro-Palestinian, kind of. Like, all the actions that the Biden administration takes are pro-Israel, but then all the words they say are like pro-Palestinian. That seems to be the way they think they can divide it and win. But they have sent over 100 arms shipments to Israel to help them level Gaza. And they keep the number below a certain level that doesn't trigger congressional oversight and then get into the media. You know, basically there's no it stops the paper trail if you keep it under a certain number. According to AI, the number is $14 million. So I don't know if that's right. But if they did 100 shipments at $14 million each, that'd be $1.4 billion worth of stuff. All while Kamala Harris is saying, this is racist. But let's play a clip of her here, where she calls for a ceasefire, and the crowd is full of pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel people, and they're just like hooting and hollering, yeah!
There must be an immediate ceasefire. for at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table.
So she just has that weird long pause. She's like, we're going to have a ceasefire. You know, dead, no sound, no sound, no sound. It's only going to last 6 weeks and doesn't change anything is what we've been talking about doing all along. I mean, I don't know if it's just the clips that I see of her, and normally she's normal, but she's just a weird talker in the stuff I've seen. Let's check in on the Ukraine war. So Ukraine's main city on the Black Sea that they have left is Odessa. And they've been launching remote control drone ships full of explosives at the Russian fleet in the Black Sea, and they've been blowing up big, expensive Russian ships, making Russia mad. And we don't know exactly what happened, but it seems like Ukraine President Zelensky was showing off the drone boats to the president of Greece in Odessa, and Russia was trying to blow up the drone boats in Odessa, and a missile got within maybe 300 feet of killing the president of Greece, and Zelensky too. But Greece is in NATO, so you know Russia almost killed the president of a NATO country. That might have led to something interesting, but misses as good as a mile. Missed him, he's alive, nothing happened. But these remote-controlled kamikaze drone ships are pretty interesting. I did some Googling on them. They're called the Magura V5. And basically, I think they're the fanciest Kawasaki jet ski you can buy, and then they take off like the handles in the seat and put molded fiberglass cover over the top. They fill it with explosives and then they remote control it at the big Navy ships. And it looks like they're putting a Starlink satellite internet dish on them, and that's how you remote control them. They basically have a high-speed connection to the internet through Elon Musk's SpaceX satellite system. And Elon Musk has previously said, you know, he wouldn't let Ukraine use the Starlink stuff to do attacks within Russia. So I don't know if he's aware of them using Starlink to do attacks in the Black Sea, and maybe that's fine, or he didn't know. We'll see on that. But if Russia gets mad enough, you know, if Russia gets mad enough, like super mad enough, they do a nuclear war. But they got a step below that, which is you blow up all the satellites in space, right? You blow up one satellite, which turns into a million little pieces of metal that go flying in every direction, which then goes and blows up a bunch of other satellites, which then each of those turn into a million little pieces of shrapnel until all of space is full of nothing but shrapnel going around at like 10 times the speed of the fastest bullet. And then rockets can never leave the Earth because right when you go up past the atmosphere, it's just nothing but super bullets going everywhere. So anyways, hopefully Russia does not destroy all the satellites we have and will ever have in the future. But so I looked up the biggest Kawasaki jet ski, because I think that's basically what Ukraine is using. And they got one that's pretty darn big. It's like 12 feet long, about 4 meters. And I think they can go like 50 kilometers an hour. And then the big Russian, it's not a battleship, a cruiser, whatever. I think they can go like 30 kilometers an hour. So they're pretty damn fast for how big they are, but they cannot outrun these jet ski drone kamikaze things. And so Ukraine blew up one of the Russian ships this week. It's a 300 foot long, whether it be 100 meters, and it cost $65 million to build. I looked up the American version. The American versions are 400 feet long and cost $400 million. So anyways, Russia gets it done. Their ships are a little bit smaller and cost like 15% as much. But so the way Ukraine did it was they sent out 10 of the drones all at once, because the Russian ships, they like try and shoot the drones with machine guns. Like, you know, Willie Ohm, OAM on YouTube, he had some video of it. It's just like Russians on the, whatever, on the deck, just holding their machine guns, shooting off into the water, and they got tracer rounds, so it looks like fireworks. And when bullets hit water, they don't go into the water. They bounce off at the same angle that they were coming down at the water. They bounce off into the air upwards at the same angle. And so it just looked like a fireworks display, as like everyone is shooting tracer rounds, like from handheld machine guns to giant guns on the ship. And then the drones got through anyways, and boom, I think 4 killed, 4 seriously wounded, and about 50 were rescued off of the ship before it sank. So I don't know what the top dog Kawasaki jet ski costs. I'm going to say maybe $20,000 American. So probably double that to modify it with remote control actuators and a Starlink satellite thing. And buy yourself a nice truck and a boat trailer. So maybe $40,000 per drone ship, and then 10 of them, that's $500,000 roughly. And so for $500,000 of drone ships, you can take out a $65 million Russian ship. And if you used it against Americans for $500,000, you could take out a $400 million American ship, because I think it'd work on American stuff too. I mean, maybe America has better machine guns, but, you know, just send out 20 drones then. Send $1 million worth of drones to take out, I don't know, America's most expensive ship is an aircraft carrier that costs $13 billion. So, I don't know, it's like, how much is a person worth? I think actuarially, they say people are worth $10 million. Well, you can kill one of those with a $1 bullet. And it looks like the future of naval warfare may mean that don't even bother building fancy ships, because you can just destroy them with a cheap-ass drone. And I looked up the Houthi drones. The Houthis have drones. Theirs are just like normal ships. Basically, they're just taking a boat and putting some remote control stuff on it, like you had for like a remote control airplane, or, well, for a, I don't know what. Not a Starlink satellite, so the thing could travel all around the world and be perfectly controlled at every moment, basically. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Elon Musk, he can flip a switch on or off and control the best thing that Ukraine has going for it. The only thing that is making them successful right now, really. And it's making them pretty damn successful, especially in the information warfare. Yeah, we're taking out all these giant expensive ships. Makes you look pretty good. And then Russia took out their first HIMARS, which is a truck that shoots rockets that America gave to Ukraine. And like a year ago, people were like, wow, Ukraine's going to win because of these HIMARS. These things are amazing. And then you haven't really heard about them that much. And anyways, apparently Russia had never been able to destroy one. But they either destroyed one this week, or they just had video of themselves destroying one. And they waited until one of their ships got blown up to release the footage of them destroying a HIMARS to kind of go like, oh, you think you can do that? Well, we can do this. And not lose the information warfare quite so bad. Boobs are back, baby. Big boobs. Let's check in with the Feminine Chaos podcast so we know what's going on with women these days. So Sydney Sweeney hosted Saturday Night Live a week ago or two. And she's an actress, 26 years old, blonde, big boobs. And people online are maybe saying it signifies the end of wokeness. Or maybe more people are writing articles about how saying it's the end of wokeness is not exactly right. I don't know. Well, quickly, the media. So Saturday Night Live had Shane Gillis, who was, that was anti-woke. Now they had Sydney Sweeney. Maybe that's anti-woke. Sydney Sweeney got in the news a couple years ago because she had a birthday party with her friends and family, and some of them wore MAGA hats. And Shane Gillis was hired and fired before he ever appeared on Saturday Night Live because he said chink in the armor without the in the armor part on a podcast. So basically, people that were attempted cancellations have hosted Saturday Night Live lately. And I was going to do a running update on The Daily Show now that Jon Stewart was back, because this first episode back seemed like it was kind of anti-woke. But the second, you know, he does it once a week on Mondays. The second week he did it, he started off the show. He's like, people think they can tell me what to do and that I can't, and that I have to be woke. Well, you can't tell me what to do. And then he just got super woke. So basically, people could tell him what to do, and anyways, I'm not following him anymore. TDS. But maybe we are switching from ass to boobs. I mean, if Taylor Swift had large breasts, then it would be easy to say, oh, we switched from Beyonce and her large buttocks to Taylor Swift and her large breasts. So, but that doesn't work because, anyways, go look at Taylor. Just doesn't work. But so the zeitgeist or whoever decides if we're a ass culture or a boob culture, maybe that's changing. One of the ladies on the podcast said that maybe Sydney Sweeney and her big boobs, which, like, they were the setup or the punchline to a lot of the jokes on the SNL. Maybe her being hot right now is part of the trad wife phenomenon. People are getting tired, maybe, of the blue-haired, crazy woke chicks, and now they want a traditional wife influencer. And I don't necessarily think this is a part of it, but I gotta do it. Gotta look at it through the lens of race. Obviously, black women have larger buttocks. And if you look up a map of breast size, basically like Russia, Norway, Finland, that's the largest breasts on the planet. So basically, blonde women. And I believe this is accounting for, you know, keep a thin waist. It's not, they're not the fattest. Finland is not the fattest. They're the largest breast size with a thin waist. And on the map, if you look for the smallest breast size, it's Black Africa and China. China. So maybe this matters for advertising, you know, companies trying to sell bikinis to women or something. I don't think any of this has anything to do with men. Like, you know, there's that question, are you an ass man or a boob man? I think the answer to that is just yes. I don't know. But the ladies were saying there's been a big change in what models look like. Like, one of them was going to Cancun and she had to buy a new bikini. And now, it used to be when you went to buy a bikini, it was just someone that looked like Barbie wearing a bikini, and you had to imagine how that thing would look on you because you didn't look like Barbie. But now they got different models that look different ways, and I guess they even give you, like, the height of the models and other numbers. I mean, I don't know. I bought a jacket on eBay the other day, you know, a used jacket, and they got out a tape measure, and they're tape measuring every part of the jacket, which made me go and tape measure every part of my jacket, and that worked pretty good. I mean, I never tape measured my jacket before, but it worked good. So I guess they're doing that with bikini stuff. But as far as, like, using fat, ugly models, like, that's a few years ago. A few years ago, it was like, the uglier, the better. Sorry, ugly ladies. And maybe now it's getting more what's useful to the customer, the better. And they say there's always an undercurrent of beautiful white women in there. I mean, even when they were doing the fattest and the missing the limbs and the whatever, there was still an undercurrent of, we still know that young white women are the hottest. I'm not saying any of this. This is just the ladies on the Feminine Chaos podcast. Don't blame me. Well, I'll say it. It's also true. There you go. You can blame me and them. And then they mention Instagram face. I mean, Instagram is the one I don't use, but so maybe it's a way of wearing your makeup. Well, it's makeup. It's possibly medical interventions into your face. Plus, it's like AI generated changing your face for, you know, online. I looked up Instagram face on a Google image search. That was interesting. There's basically articles of women going undercover or whatever. And I spent a week, you know, making sure I had Instagram face every morning, and here's how my life changed. I didn't read it. I don't know how it changed your life. But I guess there's a thing on TikTok where women ask the viewers how old they think they are. And then basically, they give you a low number if you're hot. I mean, not all. But generally, hotness indicates lower number. If you're young but ugly, I guess, you get a high number. 50 is a common number that people like to throw out. And then they mention maybe, you know, well, I'm just going to keep saying ass. Buttocks, I don't know, it's difficult. But, you know, maybe you can control how good your ass looks, but your boobs are all genetic unless you want to go full surgery. So that's not fair. I don't know. I've talked about this on a sports genetics podcast a couple years ago, but, like, your ability to motivate yourself to work out, that's genetic too. So, I mean, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. People just don't know that one's genetics. They're like, oh, well, you could have just worked out. No, you couldn't. You know, having a good-looking rear end probably is highly correlated with the ability to keep yourself motivated to work out. And one of the ladies mentions watching American Pie, which I think was around the year 2000 movie. I liked it back then. I don't know if it holds up. And she was like, it was crazy to see how women used to look because she's gotten used to Instagram face. Like in movies today, I guess they're running women's faces through AI in the movie. You don't even know it. That probably meant to. And then lip filler and Botox are just standard. I think it's for famous rich women, but I mean, that is who you see in a movie. And then you go look at a 20-year-old movie and it's like, wow, they look different. Someone was saying the Instagram face looks 3D. And when I was looking at pictures, it does look 3D. It looks 3D AI generated. And it partly is. I don't know. You can do things to try and look like your AI generated in real life. And then on the internet itself, you can be partially AI generated. So Kat has a good way of describing Instagram face and how women look today compared to, you know, beautiful actresses look 20 years ago. She said, it's like putting a rock in a rock tumbler. 20 years ago, they looked like the rock before you put it in. And now, women look like the rock after you take it out of the rock tumbler. Glossy. Well, that's the end of the podcast. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.